Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. We are getting ready to dive into another Saturday. The weekend is back upon us, and an hour long's worth of sports of what's happening right in the Mitten State is coming at you. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and I'm ready to run you through everything important to us that is happening within the state of Michigan. We're still a little far removed from talking about the Tigers, but they're coming right around the corner with spring training coming up, and there's a lot of deals that have to be made, and guys got to look at the restructuring of contracts. So we'll be getting into that soon, but before we're done today, we got a ton to get into. We'll be starting with the Lions and some of the moves that have happened with them in the last couple of days, keeping everybody updated on, you know, obviously the state's favorite football team. And then we're going to get into the transfers for both Michigan and Michigan State, what those rosters are looking like and how those coaches are trying to put their team together to prepare for the Big Ten gauntlet in the upcoming season. And then we'll be getting into Michigan State basketball as well. See what's happening on the hardwood as they have a matchup against each other coming up very soon. But they also have some games in between that we have to talk about and get into. And of course, we'll be diving into our Pistons because they're doing amazing, sitting atop of the Eastern Conference right behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. This could be a year where the Pistons are something we're talking about a lot. So make sure you're around to find out what's going on with the Pistons. And then we'll get into our Red Wings, who are also sitting atop of the Eastern Conference in their respective sport. Who would have thought that the Red Wings would be dominating the NHL and playing as well as they have been this year? I'll tell you, not me, but we'll dive deeper into that and show you the magic that is happening with our Detroit Red Wings. And of course, we'll get into our picks. And your boy had himself a week last week when it comes to the picks. As you guys know, I like to say that I know ball quite a bit, and I think last week clearly proves that. But unfortunately, we'll have to talk more about that later. Now, before we get into the weekend, as always, I'm doing absolutely fantastic. I'm excited for this weekend. Tons of sports coming up, but it is going to be cold here. So make sure you guys are taking care of yourselves. Make sure you're running those pipes. Make sure you're staying warm. You're getting out and you're running those cars. You do not want anything to freeze over. Do what you got to do to keep yourself and your things in good condition. But tons of sports coming up. Got lacrosse this weekend, basketball, football, you name it, it's probably being played. Hockey, all kinds of good stuff. I'm excited for that, to sit and enjoy time with my friends, my family, myself, play some video games, and watch some good sports. So hopefully you're going to be doing the same. And let's get right into it, as I've already wasted a ton of your time. The Detroit Lions have finalized a deal to hire Drew Petzing as their new offensive coordinator. Petzing, 38, will replace John Morton, who was fired after one season in the role. The Lions finished 9-8 this past season and failed to reach the postseason for the first time since 2022. Petzing had been the Cardinals' offensive coordinator the past three seasons with Jonathan Gannon as their head coach. This should be a play-calling role in Detroit for Petzing, as the organization was such an experienced candidate during a thorough coaching search. Morton, 56, was brought in to replace Ben Johnson, who was hired as the coach of the Bears this past season. Under Ben Johnson, the Lions led the NFL with 33.2 points per game. There has to be some leadership. There has to be detail-oriented. There's got to be a command of the room, general manager Brad Holmes said during his end-of-the-season news conference on the 8th. You just have to be able to know that there's somebody that's going to be able to dot every I and cross every T and make sure that nothing is compromised from a detail standpoint. From a standard standpoint, from the start of the game planning period all the way to the end of the week. So that is kind of why they went with Drew Petzing. We'll find out just how good Petzing is going to be once he gets in and starts calling those plays, which Dan Campbell has said during interviews that he will and is expected to relinquish that play calling duty to whoever is hired, and that is now going to be Drew Petzing. I don't know how Lions fans feel about this Petzing move, but me personally, I love the Petzing move. If I'm being honest here, the Petzing move is a move where it is all about what you can create, right? You already have Jahmyr Gibbs. You already have David Montgomery, who has been phenomenal for you. Both of them have been phenomenal for you. But this past season, it was a little rougher getting the offensive run game going after losing Ben Johnson. When you look at what Petzing has done with Jonathan Gannon over in Arizona, they had one of the best run games in the league the past couple of years. Every time it went bad, it was because James Conner got hurt, which you can't really do anything about. Sometimes guys just get hurt. But everything else about the scheme of their offense and the way the run game went and then how the pass game was able to evolve around the run game, Petzing had a lot to do with that. And granted, Arizona doesn't have the offensive talent that the Lions have. The Lions have tons of offensive talent. I already named their running backs, but they're supposedly going to get Sam Laporta back from his injury. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, and I mean the Isaac Tesla. The list goes on and on. Brock Wright. I could keep throwing out names because they are that good offensively. And now you're giving that to Drew Petzing, who is very good at coaching. Yeah, I think that they will do a fantastic job on the offensive end. But one slipper they have in that is Dan Skipper, who has announced his retirement from the NFL. He went from an undrafted journeyman lineman to a cult hero in Detroit, even scoring a 9-yard touchdown in 2024. He joined Taylor Decker and Scott Conover as the only offensive lineman in Lions history to have a touchdown reception. 24 years of putting on pads and a helmet every fall. This year, I'll trade that out to pursue a career on the other side in coaching. The memories and experiences that the NFL has brought me and my family are hard to put into words. Thankful for every person that has been a part of my journey. It's time for me to report as retired. And he said, sorry, I had to do it one last time. Looking forward to seeing him coach somewhere. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic. Maybe at the high school level, maybe college, maybe he wants to get in at the NFL. Who knows where he wants to coach at, but the options are almost endless for him. They're almost endless for him. So I'm excited to see where he ends up and how his career continues. But a fantastic job for Dan Skipper as an offensive lineman in Detroit. Now let's pop over to college football. We're going to talk about Michigan first, and we're going to look at the transfers for them. Michigan has John Henry Daly, a 6'4", 255-pound defensive end, transferring from the University of Utah. And they also have Smith Snowden, a 5'10", 185-pound cornerback, transferring from the University of Utah. J.J. Buchanan, a 6'3", 225-pound tight end, transferring from the University of Utah. Shocker, right? No. Taylor Tatum, a 5'10", 212 running back who will be transferring to the safety room. He will be playing safety on this Michigan team coming over from the University of Oklahoma. Jamie French Jr., 6'1", 185-pound receiver, transferring from the University of Texas. Houston, Kuhanaani Torres is transferring from the University of Nebraska, 6'3", 300-pound offensive guard. Jonah Lea is a 6'5", 285-pound defensive tackle transferring from the University of Utah. Max Alford, a 6'1", 235-pound inside linebacker, is transferring from Birmingham University, BYU. And then we also have Colin Hurley, QB, 6'1", 218 pounds, transferring from Louisiana State. You also have Braden Fowler Nicolosi, a quarterback, 6'2", 200 pounds, transferring from Colorado State. You have Chris Bracey, a 6'1", 195-pound cornerback, transferring from the University of Memphis. Then you have Cam Brown and Trey Bukowski, who are both kickers. Cam is 6'2", 185. Trey is 6'1", 170. Cam from the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, UNLV, and then Trey is from the University of Pittsburgh. And then you have IC Moa, who's transferring from Michigan State University, 6'2", 235-pound inside linebacker. Right behind him, Nathaniel Staling from North Dakota State, a 6'2", 238-pound inside linebacker as well. Bumping things over to Michigan State, who's also in the same boat. They have Ben Murawski, a 6'7", 335-pound offensive tackle transferring from Connecticut. Also transferring from Connecticut is Cam Edwards, a 5'11", 210 running back transferring from University of Miami in Florida. 6', 170-pound cornerback Charles Brantley. And Iowa State University safety, 6'2", 205-pound Trey Bell is transferring to Michigan State. Couple more transfers here from North Dakota State. Trent Fraley, offensive center, 6'1", 303 pounds. An athlete from Ferris State University, 6'3", 240 pounds, Carson Golker. And Georgia Southern University transfer, offensive tackle, 6'4", 295 pounds, Robert Wright Jr. Trey Lyle is an outside linebacker, 6'7", 246 pounds, transferring from Southeast Missouri State University. Wow. Big guys. And then some more transfers coming in. I mean, the list goes on and on for Michigan State. It's more than half of their list is transfers. They're going to look to make some impact there, but we'll see in the long run what that is going to look like for them. Now we're going to pop over and talk about basketball. This time we're going to roll right and stay in East Lansing, talk about the Michigan State Spartans first. They are 17-2 now after their West Coast trip. They took down Washington 80-63, took down Oregon 68-52, both of those games on the road. They will be returning to Maryland later today, noon on CBS. Then they have Rutgers 6:30 p.m. on the 27th, FS1. That's going to be Tuesday night. And then you have Michigan 8 p.m. on the 30th on the road at the Chrysler Center on Fox. And that's next Friday. Those are the big games coming up for Michigan State over the week. We can talk more about the Maryland game coming up here. They're giving Michigan State a 91.4% chance to win this game. Maryland has struggled so far in the Big Ten. They are 1-7 in conference play. Their one win comes over Penn State, 96-73, but they have lost to Illinois, USC, UCLA, and Indiana. Obviously, Michigan State is sitting at 5-0. They are 7-1 in conference play, but their last five are against USC, Northwestern, Indiana, Washington, and Oregon, which they have handled relatively easily for the most part. Then they'll be taking on Rutgers. Rutgers also has struggled a little bit. They're 2-6 in the Big Ten, 9-10 overall. This game giving Michigan State an 88.5% chance to win. Rutgers has wins over Northwestern and Oregon, both of those games in overtime, but losses to Iowa, Wisconsin, and Illinois. Michigan State should cruise into that game against Michigan, which obviously sets up for a blockbuster game. On the other hand, though, Michigan has big things coming up for them. They played last night against Ohio State. As you guys obviously know, I record on Friday, so you know how that game turned out. I have no clue, and we'll find out in the coming moments as I'm recording on Friday. So I'm really excited for that game tonight. But then Nebraska comes into town on Tuesday, 7 p.m. on Peacock. Michigan, an 82.2% chance to win this game at the Big House. But, I mean, Nebraska's no slouch whatsoever. Sam Hoiberg has done great for them. Buyuktensel, I'm sure I said that wrong, and I'll find out later how to say it, 6.1 rebounds on the year, and Price Sanford averages 17 points per game, shooting 48% from the field. This is going to be a blockbuster game. Nebraska's undefeated in the Big Ten, undefeated on the year at 19-0 and 8-0, and then you got Michigan 17-1, 7-1 in the Big Ten, looking to crash all of that. They're one loss to Wisconsin by three. I think Michigan can crash Nebraska's season, bring them back to reality, and then continue to show why they're one of the best teams in the country. And that's obviously going to set Michigan up for a big, big matchup. Two top 10 matchups for Michigan this week is Michigan State sits at 10, and that game's going to be on Friday, 8 p.m. Taking a quick peek at that, Michigan is projected to win 57% to 43% for State, and that game is just going to be a whole bunch of fun. Obviously, you know who I'm choosing. I'm choosing Michigan through and through in that game. But we'll talk more about basketball next week. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking about our Pistons here on Mid Madness on 95.3. Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. It's time for us to step into Little Caesars Arena, and we will keep things rolling with the basketball talk and get into our Detroit Pistons. Let's start, obviously, where we always start when we talk about the Pistons, the standings. We'll start in the division this time, because why not? Let's dog on these fools. The Pistons are 32-10 atop of your Central Division. Next best team sits 8.5 games back, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who are 25-20. Then you have the Bulls, who are 22-22 at 11 games back. The Bucks are 18-25, 14.5 games back. And the Pacers are 10-35 and are 23.5 games behind your Pistons. Looking at the conference overall, your Pistons are number one in the Eastern Conference, sitting 5.5 games above the Boston Celtics. There are 7 games above both the Knicks and the Raptors. The Celtics are 27-16. The Knicks are 26-18. The Raptors are 27-19. Then the 76ers are 8.5 games behind your Pistons at 24-19. Then right behind them are the Cavs with that 25-20, but they're still 8.5 games back. That's your top six who are guaranteed to make the playoffs if they started today in the Eastern Conference. Then you have the Magic, 23-20, 9.5 games behind our Pistons. Miami Heat, 23-22, 10.5 games behind Detroit. And then, obviously, 22-22, the Bulls, 11 games back. And the Hawks are 21-25, 13 games back. That's your 7-10 making the play-in if the playoffs started right now in the Eastern Conference. And let's talk about the league overall. Your Pistons are only 3.5 games behind the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are 37-8 on the year. Your Pistons are 32-10. The Thunder have a plus 13.6 score differential. Your Pistons plus 7.3. Pistons are 8-2 in their last 10 on a 4-game win streak. Thunder are 7-3, a 2-game win streak. I mean, looking at the splits for the Pistons, they're 17-4 at home, 14-6 on the road, 8-3 in the division, and 22-6 in the conference. That is how you dominate across the league. They're doing so well. They're doing so well in the NBA that it's almost hard to fathom that they won't be coming out of the East later on in this season, right? Because, I mean, when you look at it, the score differentials, they have, I believe, the second highest score differential in the league behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Celtics giving them a push for that at 7, but everyone else is either negative or below that. You got a 6.1 from the Houston Rockets, but a 5.3 from the Spurs, but everybody else is kind of in that 4 range or lower, if not negative. So the Pistons are doing everything correctly so far to start the year, and that is why they're at 32-10, and that is why they're not only the top seed in the Eastern Conference, but are the second best team in the entire NBA. They haven't lost since they played the Clippers, which was obviously 4 games ago. Before that, they hadn't lost in 3 games, which was to the Heat. And before that, they beat the Lakers and then lost 2 in a row to the Clippers and the Jazz. But they're not losing many games. They've only lost 2 games in a row twice this year. So that's something to always keep in mind. But before we dive deeper into the schedule, let's talk about these statistics as always. Cade Cunningham doing his thing out on the floor. He's got 25.7 points, 9.8 assists, only 3.8 turnovers, shooting 45.2% from the field, all in 35.4 minutes per game. Then you got Jalen Duren, who has 17.8 points per game, 10.9 rebounds per game. So he's averaging that double-double for the Pistons, 6.9 on the defensive end, 4 offensive rebounds per game, shooting 63% from the field, all of that in just 28.3 minutes per game. And then you have Asar Thompson, who has 1.7 steals, only turning it over 1.5 times a game, in 26 minutes. And then our boy Isaiah Stewart, who arguably should be up for Defensive Player of the Year, has 2 blocks per game, 0.3 steals, and 5.6 rebounds. The team is averaging 117.2 points per game, 46.3 rebounds per game, and 26.7 assists per game. Obviously, the day-to-day injuries are starting to pile up again. Ron Holland, Caris LeVert, Duncan Robinson, even Cade Cunningham as they start to do some resting and things, getting ready for the All-Star break. Did somebody say All-Star? Did somebody say All-Star break? Well, since you did, let's talk about the most exciting news of the last couple of weeks. Cade Cunningham is not only going to the All-Star game, Cade Cunningham is going to be an All-Star starter in this year's All-Star game. Why is that so significant? Well, the Pistons haven't sent anyone to the All-Star game since Blake Griffin back in 2018-2019, that season. And they haven't sent a starter since 2009. Can anybody tell me who that starter was in 2009 for the All-Star game from the Pistons? Well, let me remind you. Homie don't like practice. Homie had tattoos. Homie had a cornrows to the back. He wore a headband and had one of the nastiest crossovers in the entire NBA history. He hit Jordan with that thing one time and everybody went crazy. Yeah, I'm talking about Allen Iverson. The Pistons haven't had an All-Star starter since Allen Iverson. And guess who's going to do it now? Cade Cunningham, because Cade Icewood is that. Cade Icewood is that man. If you don't think Cade Icewood is absolutely fantastic, then maybe you shouldn't be watching Pistons basketball and shouldn't be a fan. There's a reason Cade is an All-Star starter this year. There's a reason that the Pistons are 32-10 this year. There's a reason that they're the first seed in the Eastern Conference and are arguably the best team in the NBA. There's a reason Cade Cunningham is in MVP conversations, and it's because he's doing things like this. Being an All-Star starter for a team that hasn't had one in over a decade, almost two. And then to be put in the same category as a guy like Allen Iverson, Chauncey Billups, come on, bro. He is doing things that we have wanted a Piston to do for years and years and years. So let's keep Cade Icewood here as long as we can, and let's keep propping him up to the way that he should be propped, because he's playing at an unbelievable level. An unbelievable level. And that's part of the reason why he is getting the accolades that he is getting. Now that we've gotten through all the fun stuff for this team, let's talk about what's been happening over the last couple of days. Since we last talked, they took down the Indiana Pacers, 121-78. It was easy money, no questions there. It was bananas. But then they welcomed the Boston Celtics into town, and you would never guess who was not playing in this game. Yeah, that's right. Oh, nope, sorry. Wrong game. Cade Cunningham did play in this game. I could have swore he didn't, but I guess he did play against the Celtics, which is awesome because, I mean, that's the kind of game you want Cade Cunningham to play in. The Pistons win 104-103. Cade Cunningham had 14 assists with no turnovers in 40 minutes of play. Tobias Harris led the team with 25 points at 11 of 20 shooting. Jaylen Brown had 32 points in this game, 11 of 28 from the field, 8 of 10 from the free throw line. He had 11 rebounds in this game. Derek White had 5 assists. Pistons won this game 104-103, shooting 43-31-74 in their splits. Only 8 turnovers, 41 rebounds. They led for 52% of the game and had a largest lead of 12. But it was the next game that the Pistons didn't have the help that they needed in terms of Cade Cunningham. So who was going to come through in the scoring department, you ask? Well, they took on the New Orleans Pelicans without Cade Cunningham, and it was no problems there as well. They were able to beat the Pelicans 112-104. Jalen Duren, leading scorer with 20 points, also grabbed 15 rebounds in this game. Dennis Jenkins had 4 assists, only 5 turnovers, and 27 minutes of play. Sadiq Bey, let me tell you, Sadiq Bey left the Pistons and said, hold on, I'm going to learn how to hoop real fast. Bro came out, had 20 points to lead the Pelicans, 4 of 12 from the field, 11 of 11 from the free throw line. Micah Peavy had 7 rebounds. Derek Queen, 8 assists, 4 turnovers in 23 minutes of play. Your Pistons shot 44, 38, 79 in their splits from the field. 20 turnovers, 47 rebounds, led for 99% of this game. The only time they didn't lead was when this game was tied. And they had a largest lead of 13. They now lead the season series 1-0. The Pelicans have really struggled this year. They're 10 and 36. They also had Zion Williamson leave this game early with an injury, so that's something to keep in mind of as well. Coming up, obviously you guys know how things shaped against the Rockets as that game was last night. Then they have the Sacramento Kings coming up on Sunday. Denver Nuggets on Tuesday, which starts a road trip for them, where Thursday they will play the Phoenix Suns. Then they'll have a back-to-back Golden State Friday night, 10 p.m. on ESPN. So it's going to be a little interesting for our Pistons in the next couple of games. Looking at this Denver game, first and foremost, I think the Sacramento game is a little bit easier for them in terms of who they have to play and how much success they could have there. They are giving the Pistons a 64.4% chance to win this game. They are 14-6 when they play away from Little Caesars Arena. The Nuggets are 12-8 at home, though. Jokic is out, so that is a big deal here. He's out with a knee injury until at least February 1st. Tamar Bates is out with a foot injury until at least April 1st. Game time decision is Christian Braun. Brown, who's also out with an ankle injury. Cameron Johnson out with a knee injury until at least January 27th. So maybe that's why they feel so comfortable about the Pistons, as they obviously just have guys on game time decisions and not out for any significant amount of time. Also, that Phoenix game could be a little interesting as well. They're 27-17. They're first in the Pacific Division. Golden State Warriors have struggled this year. They're 25-21. They're third on the Pacific Division. But those seem much more favorable for the Pistons than that Nuggets game. The Nuggets game is the one game I'd look at kind of spoiling things. And then they have to play them twice within the next couple of weeks. But for now, we'll leave that be. We'll talk more about the Pistons next week. We're going to get into the Red Wings and flip things over to the ice in Little Caesars Arena when we're back with more Mid-Madness on 95.3 The Ticket.
Mike Rowe on the skills gap and how a student organization known as Skills USA is trying to fill it.
So the thing about Skills USA that's so cool, and the reason that my foundation has supported it for years, is that it's deliberately and intentionally focused on celebrating a skill. 3 million jobs right now exist in the trades and transportation and commerce. The skills gap is real. Training kids and getting them excited to do the jobs that exist ought to be job one. Skills USA does that in a big way. It's about excellence and competition and being good at what you do, and eventually through all of that, learning who you are. Skills USA is working.
Learn more at microworks.com and skillsusa.org.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. It's time for us to stay right inside of Little Caesars Arena, but we're going to take up that hardwood and we are going to drop down some ice, because what's better than talking about a little bit of hockey, especially when your Red Wings are sitting atop the Atlantic Division, and not just the Atlantic Division, but basically the Eastern Conference overall. We'll start there in the Atlantic Division before we decide to talk about anything else. Your Detroit Red Wings are 31-16-5 for 67 points, sitting right behind them at 31-13-4 are the Tampa Bay Lightning with 66 points. Montreal Canadiens, 28-16-7, 63 points. Sabres, 28-17-5 for 61 points. The Bruins are 29-20-2 for 60 points. The Maple Leafs, 24-17-9 for 57 points. The Panthers, 26-20-3 for 55 points. And the Senators, 23-20-7 for 53 points. And then when you look at the Eastern Conference overall, the Red Wings are tied with the Hurricanes at the top, who are 31-15-5 for 67 points. Then you have the Lightning, Canadiens, and Sabres in that order. The Penguins are tied with the Sabres to wrap up the top five at 61 points. So why are the Red Wings so good? Well, let's look over at the team leaders for statistics. Alex DeBrincat has 26 goals, 11 of them on the power play on 183 shots. Then you have Lucas Raymond. Raymond has 56 points. Lucas has 39 assists. 17 of them are on the power play, which matches his goal total. He has 17 goals and 17 power play assists. His plus minus is 9 as he leads the team in points as well. John Gibson, 2.67 goals against average, has a save percentage of .904. He's got 20 wins on the year. He's only given up 81 goals on 845 shots, which gives him a total of 764 saves. The team scores 3.08 goals per game. They give up 3 goals per game, which is good for 14th in the league. Power play dominant. Talk to me again. The power play is dominant. 25.2% on the power play is good for 6th in the entire NHL. And their penalty kill sits at 71.9%, which could obviously get better because it is at 71.9%. That's good for 17th in the league. So what is so good? Well, first off, Dylan Larkin scored an overtime winner with 307 into the period against the Maple Leafs. That was amazing because it means that the Maple Leafs got swept by your Red Wings this year. Yeah, you heard that right. They got swept. The Red Wings beat the Maple Leafs 4 times this year. I'll get into that a little bit more. But the overtime winner was a significant one for Dylan Larkin as he passed Sergei Fedorov for the most overtime winners in Detroit Red Wings history. But he made something very clear. He said, look, there's a huge asterisk by that record and my name for that, because if Sergei Fedorov was playing 3-on-3 overtime, there isn't a person in the world who would come close to the amount of overtime game winners he would have if he was playing 3-on-3. And you know, Larkin's got a serious point there. They were back playing 5v5, which makes it a lot harder to score, obviously. When you have the extra ice, you can use your speed and the space to your advantage. Sergei Fedorov would have been unreal during overtime, and that number probably would have been a lot higher. But still, congratulations to Captain Dylan Larkin, who smashes one home in overtime to take care of the Leafs and also cement his name into more Red Wings history. Hometown guys doing things for the hometown just feel a little bit more like fun, more just better, right? And that's exactly how I feel anytime Dylan Larkin does something for the Red Wings. Last time we talked, they were coming off a win against San Jose 4-2, and now they also beat Ottawa 4-3 in overtime. Like I said, they took down Toronto 2-1 in overtime in this most recent game. So they beat Toronto this year 6-3 back on October 11th. Then they beat them 3-2 on October 13th. Beat them in overtime 3-2 on December 28th, and then beat them in overtime again just a few days ago on the 21st, 2-1. So the Red Wings own the Maple Leafs this year, even though the Maple Leafs dominated the faceoffs every single game. But the Red Wings had more shots. Penalty minutes were about the same, but obviously at the end of the day, the Red Wings scored far more goals in this series than the Maple Leafs did. The Red Wings had a total of 14 goals in this series, while the Maple Leafs only scored 8 goals. So obviously the Red Wings are better than the Maple Leafs. Not much there to say, but it always feels sweet and extra good when you sweep a team like the Maple Leafs. But their most recent game, not one that we want to highlight. Lucas Raymond gets the top performer. Talbot gets the loss. But unfortunately, on the road, the Red Wings lose to the Minnesota Wild in what was a game that was back-to-back. They just played the Maple Leafs on Wednesday. Then they had to turn around and play the Wild on Thursday. They lose 4-3. There are 39 shots in the 33 in favor of the Wild. 18-15 in hits in favor of the Wild. 4-8 penalty minutes in favor of the Wild. Wild had 4 penalty minutes in this game. The Red Wings won the faceoff 66% of the time, but they couldn't get enough goals in the back of the net. Lucas Raymond smashes two in this game. James Van Riemsdyk also had a game, a point in this game, or a goal in this game as well. But it was the combination of Matt Zuccarello and Kirill Kaprizov that put this together. And Kaprizov had the OT winner from Quinn Hughes for the Wild to put them ahead in this game and give them the lead in the series 1-0. They will play again on April 5th to see if they will split or if the Wild will own the Red Wings this year. The Red Wings are 13-8-4 on the road. The Wild were 14-6-6 at home. So it makes a lot of sense as to why the Red Wings were not able to come out with this game. But the important part is they still grab a win in this game because it was an overtime loss. That's the most important thing. They lost in overtime. They didn't lose this game in regulation. They lost in overtime. So they still pick up the point. They remain the top of the Atlantic, remain the top of the East, and they keep progressing toward getting that one seed in the playoffs. What do they have coming up over the next week? Well, they got Winnipeg later tonight at 7 p.m. That's their last road game before they come home for a bit. Tuesday, they're going to take on the Los Angeles Kings, 7 p.m. All of these games will be on ESPN. Well, the first three will be on ESPN Plus. And then Thursday, they'll welcome the Washington Capitals into Little Caesars Arena, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN Plus and Hulu. And then Saturday, 1 p.m., they'll have the Colorado Avalanche in one of two back-to-back games against the Avalanche, one at home, one on the road. That game, 1 p.m. on ABC next Saturday. So, I mean, a great chance for the Red Wings to pop back looking at this game against Winnipeg. It's a little tough because, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck has been good, but they are 20-23-7 this year. They're 12-9-5 at home. So there's a chance for the Red Wings to pop in and steal this, as they did win the first game at home back on New Year's Eve, 2-1. But now they're on the road, a chance for them to sweep this series as well. So we'll see if they're able to come out victorious again against the Jets and sweep them, which will give them some momentum and have another win on their belt before they welcome the Kings into town, which the Kings are 12-6-6 on the road, 20-16-13. So they've been getting to a lot of overtime games. They just can't really win them. So that's tough for them. The Red Wings did beat the Kings 4-3 in a shootout back on October 30th. So the Wings will look to sweep this series as well before taking on Washington next Thursday, which I do know they have already lost to Washington at least once this year. The Red Wings are up 2-0 in this series. They beat them 5-2 and 3-2 on December 20th and 21st, respectively. And now they'll play them trying to sweep this series as well. But when we come back from the break, we'll get into our picks here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket. Fly. Welcome to Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. It's time to get into my favorite part of the show. It's time for us to talk about these picks. And you can jump right in along on the action and see if you know ball better than I do. Use the chat feature in the 95.3 Ticket app to play along with us. So how did the picks roll? Well, I select six games from the week, are most of the time the best games, either the ones that are going to be the most competitive, or we go with ranked, we go with playoff, etc. I deliberate. I go through and talk about all the things that I think are going to happen or why they're going to turn out that way, and use my statistics and knowledge to my standpoint. And then I make my picks after my research, and boom, I tell you my picks. And then we see if I know ball as well as I think I do. But the cool part is you, like I said, can play right along. So you can listen to me deliberate, listen to the research I have, listen to all the nonsense that I spew about why things are going to go the way it's go, and then formulate your own opinions. Do your own research, have your own deliberation, think about how you believe the game will turn out and why it's going to be the opposite, most likely, of what I say. And then you write down your picks based off the games that we picked, and then you submit those picks right into the 95.3 Ticket app. And then we'll be able to play right along and see if you did as well or better than I did that week. And just as a reminder, we all miss Jacob. I know I do, because I miss beating up on him so much. We had three rounds of picks, and Jacob went 0-2-1. 0-2-1. right? And that means I went 2-0-1. Well, what does that mean? That means I beat Jacob twice. Jacob lost to me twice. And we tied once. Jacob never beat me. I never lost to Jacob. So if you think you know ball better than Jacob, if you think you know ball better than me, hop in that chat feature, play along, and see if you know ball as well as I do. Speaking of knowing ball, last week was a week for your boy. Talk to me. 6-0 last week on my picks. That's right, a perfect 6-0. The Broncos took down the Bills, the Seahawks over the 49ers, the Patriots over the Texans, the Rams over the Bears, the Indiana Hoosiers, congratulations on their national championship over the Miami Hurricanes, and then the Pistons took down the Celtics. That's going to bump me up to 84-48. We got a couple more weeks before we got to start a new rendition of picks. But for now, we're stepping back into the NFL playoffs, which the Super Bowl will be the end of this rendition of picks. And then we'll run around and talk about probably a lot of basketball and hockey before we get back into the swing of things in football in the fall. So I've got six games loaded up, and let's jump right into it, starting with the NFL playoffs. The AFC Championship game is January 25th. That's Sunday, 3 p.m. It's going to be on CBS. It's going to be on Paramount Plus, and it's going to be right here on 95.3, the ticket. They're giving New England a 59.4% chance to win, a 40.6% chance for Denver. Why? Well, because Denver's backup quarterback, Jared Stidham, is going to have to step in and replace Bo Nix, who hurt and broke a bone in his foot and is now out for the remainder of the year. They also have J.K. Dobbins, who was on the IR. A depleted Broncos roster will be going against arguably one of the best Patriots teams we've seen in the last 5-8 years. Drake May leading them with over 4,000 passing yards in the regular season. Travion Henderson just under 1,000 rushing yards. Stephon Diggs just over 1,000 receiving yards. The Broncos have a blemish in their last 5 games. That was to Jacksonville back on the 21st, where they lost by 14, 34-20. Then you have the Patriots, who are 5-0. They beat Baltimore, the Jets, Miami, the Chargers, and Houston. The Broncos also have wins over Chargers, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Green Bay in that same stretch. Unfortunately for me, this one's fairly simple. I have to go with the Patriots simply because Bo Nix is not starting and Jarrett Stidham is. I don't know how that is supposed to make me feel confident that the Broncos will win. It may be closer than some people think, but I can't put my trust in Stidham the way that some other people may be able to. Which gets us over to the NFC Championship game, which is 6:30 p.m. on Sunday on Fox and also here on 95.3 The Ticket. The Rams, 12-5, 5-4 on the road, taking on the Seattle Seahawks, 14-3, 6-2 at home. Rams, 46.2% chance, 53.8% for Seattle. Seattle 2.5-point favorites, -148 on the money line, +124 for the Rams, 46.5 on the over under. I mean, not a lot of injuries for either side for this team. We know that Sam Darnold is going to play. The Rams have 2 losses in their last 5. The Seahawks do not. What this comes down to is points against. Seattle's only given up 292 points the entire regular season. The Rams gave up 346. That factors in my mind. When defense is how you win championships, I think Seattle is about to etch themselves back into another Super Bowl game because of their defense. It doesn't mean Sam Darnold's bad. It doesn't mean Kenneth Walker can't run like we saw him do last week for 5 touchdowns. And it's not like, you know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba isn't one of the best receivers in the country. But when your defense is that good, that's who you lean on and that's who you give the respect to. I'm going to take the Seahawks to take down the Rams, giving us a Patriots-Seahawks Super Bowl again. I know, right? Disgusting. Anyway, getting over onto the hardwood, we're starting in the Big 12. Saturday, later today, ESPN, 2 p.m. The 6th-ranked Houston Cougars are 17-1, 5-0 in the Big 12, taking on the 12th-ranked Texas Tech Raiders, who are 15-4, 5-1 in the Big 12. The Cougars are 3.5-point favorites, -139.5 on the over-under. The money line is off for this game for some reason. Houston has a 60.5% chance, 39.5 for Texas Tech. Texas Tech is led by JT Toppin, both points and reboundings. And they have Christian Anderson pouring in 7.4 assists. And then you have Emmanuel Sharp, 15.9 points. Chris Sinak Jr. has 7.6 rebounds. And Kingston Fleming's 5.4 assists. 5-0 in their last five are Houston. 4-1 in their last five is Texas Tech. Texas Tech has one loss to Houston. It's hard to beat a team twice. The only thing that makes this game tough for Houston is that it is on the road. But Houston has been phenomenal this year. There's a reason they're undefeated in the Big 12. And the only reason they're not atop of the Big 12 conference is because Arizona's there, who's 19-0 and 6-0. I think that Houston-Arizona is one of the most exciting games of the year. Looking forward to that game coming around. It's not here yet, but I think that Houston keeps their winning ways going in this game as well. Now transitioning over to the Big 10. The 11th ranked Illinois Fighting Illini are 16-3, 7-1 in the Big 10. They're taking on the number 4 ranked Purdue Boilermakers, who are 17-2, 7-1 in the Big 10. This game is later today on Fox, 3 p.m. 35.8% chance for Illinois, 64.2% chance for Purdue. This game is at Mackey Arena in West Lafayette, Indiana. The money line off for this game as well, which is interesting. -2.5 are the favorites for Purdue. Or 150.5 is the over-under. Purdue has Braden Smith averaging 14.5 points per game and 9.1 assists. They have Trey Kaufman Wren, who has 8.9 rebounds. Keaton Wagler, 15.9 points and 4 assists to lead Illinois. And then they have David Merkovich, who has 8.4 rebounds. They average about the same amount of points for and against. They're shooting about the same. This game is about as even as it can get. Purdue is coming off a loss to UCLA by 2. Illinois is so far 5-0 in their last 5. Wins over Rutgers, Iowa, Northwestern, Minnesota, and Maryland. Purdue wins over Washington, Penn State, Iowa, and USC in that same time frame. I'm leaning toward the side of ESPN as well with the 64.2%. I think playing in Mackey Arena is one of the hardest places to play in not only the Big Ten, but the country. That's going to make it hard for Illinois to go in there and win, especially when they got to play against guys like Braden Smith and Kaufman Wren, who have been fantastic so far this year. I think Purdue wins a close one at home, although Illinois could easily steal this one away. Another game happening in the Big Ten. The 7th-ranked Nebraska Cornhuskers are 19-0, 8-0 in the Big Ten, are going to have another tough test. This game will be Tuesday, January 27, 7 p.m. on Peacock, going against the 3rd-ranked Michigan Wolverines, 17-1, who are 7-1 in the Big Ten. This game will be at Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor. We talked a little bit about this game earlier with Sanford and Hoiberg. Michigan does average 11 more points per game. They do give up 4 more points than Nebraska does. They are shooting 4% better than Nebraska at 52%. Michigan gives up 69 points per game. They rebound 6 more times than Nebraska does at 42 times. They have 1 more assist at 19. They have 4 more blocks at 6.2, and they have just about the same amount of steals. Obviously, Michigan has the one blemish on their record in the last 5. Nebraska's undefeated, obviously, in the year. They have wins over Washington, Northwestern, Oregon, Indiana, and Ohio State in their last 5. Michigan, Indiana, Oregon, Washington, and Penn State wins over. They do play Ohio State, as you know, before this game will play. I think they commence and go on to beat Ohio State, and I think they're going to beat Nebraska as well. If you think I'm picking against Michigan, you obviously don't know me. And I will be glued to my TV for this game. It will be exciting, and I hope that Michigan comes out on top like I believe they will, because I think they just have a better roster. Our last pick of the week is going down in the UFC. All of this now transferred over to Paramount Plus. Main card starts at 9, prelims at 7, early prelims at 5. Later today, you have Justin Gaethje, who is 26-5, going against Paddy Pimblett, who is 23-3. The American Gaethje versus the Englishman Pimblett. Gaethje, 5'11", 155 pounds, 37 years old, 70 inches in the reach. He fights from orthodox stance. Meanwhile, you have Pimblett, 5'10", 155 pounds, 31 years old, 73 inches on the reach. He also fights orthodox. Gaethje lands 69.5 5.59 significant strikes landed per match, 5.19 for Pimblett. The accuracy, though, was just about the same, 59.63% for Gaethje, 60.18% for Pimblett. I mean, gosh, this fight is extremely hard to pick, but for me, it's a lightweight main event title fight. Gaethje doesn't lose those too often, so I'm going to rock with Gaethje to retain his fight, which gives me the Patriots, Seahawks, Houston, Purdue, Michigan, and Gaethje. But coming up on Sunday, you do have AFC and NFC championships games. You got the Patriots versus the Broncos coming at you at 3, and the Seahawks and Rams coming at you at 6:30 right here on The Ticket. We'll be back next week talking all things happening in Michigan with Michigan Sports on Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.